So, tonight we're going to talk about emotions. It's not that emotions are only with aversion, but it's the aversion emotions that really wake us up. And they're also the most difficult ones to deal with. And so, in a way, I'm hoping that for the rest of the month, every time some unpleasant emotion comes up, you'll think, ah, this is my moment. I can awaken and have a completely different look at it. I believe that dealing with emotions is probably the most difficult part of practice. I mean, in some respects, you could think, for those of you that have been practicing a long time, you can think back to when you first started practicing and you had to, and some teacher said to just keep returning to the breath, and the idea of returning to the breath over and over and over and over and over seemed like an impossible thing to do, even though now it's a little bit easier and sometimes it's not, but you don't really get stressed out about it that much. But these emotions are different than that, because emotions are really the glue that makes us who we are. It really is the aspect of selfing that is the most difficult to practice through. And so I'm going to try to see if I can talk about them in a way that's easier to understand them and at the same time encourage us to take these emotions seriously. Not seriously like there's something wrong with them, but seriously that they are delusional and are really of no value. So that can sound a little strange, I know, but it really to see through the selfing that they actually create. They're like super glue. So if you try to use super glue and you get it on your fingers and they just get glued together, and you can see, I mean, it's just glue, but something about that super glue bonds so tightly that you're almost, whenever you're using super glue, you really take the time to try to get the glue where it needs to be, because anything else it touches is going to be bonded together. That's sort of the way to begin to think about these emotions, that they are not random things. They're not random experiences, phenomena. And they have a way of bonding together. So you have a moment of sadness, and your mind will glue that moment to every moment of sadness you've ever had in your entire life. And what could be a simple moment in time can turn into this gigantic pit that you fall into, as if this moment of sadness is equal to all the sadness you've ever experienced in your life. And so it's really, most of these hindrances are about wise attention, and wise attention is the main thrust over and over and over. But I want to go back a little bit to what we talked about at the beginning of the month. If you think about these hindrances as showing up in two layers, a gross layer that's our reactivity. So when Tim was talking about desire, it's the immediate grasping towards some pleasurable thing, putting the pleasure in the object and grasping after it. And then there's a subtle level. And for desire, it would be the subtle pain that comes with constantly having to grasp after some pleasurable thing that never satisfies us. So there's a bit of discomfort, dissatisfaction in that grasping. It's the same thing with aversion. There's that reactivity of pushing away, and there's the subtler place, and I think that subtler place is what I want to talk about. That reactivity is the part of emotions that catches us. So another way to think about emotions is you can think about them as a manifestation of this symbiotic body that we live in, body-mind. They're thoughts, and yet they carry or they ride these sensations that come with them. They're like these, they're like accompanied by all these sensations that come with each of these thoughts. So it's not just a thought in a vacuum. A thought in a vacuum we might could actually deal with. If we just had some passing thought come by, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But if you have some passing thought like, there you go again messing up, it's usually accompanied by these sensations that make that thought real. You can feel, there you go again always messing up. And it makes that idea real. I remember being on a retreat one time, and I wanted to just understand, you know, sensation, because I had so many unpleasant sensations and primarily a lot of anxiety, a lot of anxiety. And so I tried to see all these different sensations. How many sensations do we actually have? How many different types of sensations? And I can't remember specifically, but I think I came up with 22 different felt senses for myself, like 22 different things that I came up with, but that they were always paired with something else. Like there was never 22 separate. It was always 22, but more like 11, because it was just paired with another one, paired with another one. Or three would come together, or four or five would be together, and that would be my sensation around anxiety or fear or sadness or whatever emotion was coming up, just so I could see what is this. And in some respects, that's the kind of relationship we need to begin to build with these emotions so that we can see them in a little bit more abstract relationship, so we can see them with a little bit more abstract connection to them. So I want to give you an example. Let's say something happens and you feel a moment of disappointment. You didn't get a job you wanted. Something happened, and you just feel disappointed. The disappointment, it's like emotions build our life. They put color and depth to life. So not getting a job that you want is rationally related to disappointment. It's just the nature of being human, and disappointment is a real experience in and of itself connected to not getting something you want. So this something you want, it doesn't happen, disappointment. In theory, what Dhamma is pointing to is that that disappointment is just like breathing. It's gonna rise in relation to the conditions of not getting something, and it's gonna pass away. But that's not what we do. And this is how it gets a little difficult. Because as soon as that disappointment arises, it's uncomfortable, it's painful. We don't like it. So instead, we shift our attention to something pleasurable. We look for something that will make us more happy so we don't have to feel this disappointment. And we can probably do that. You know, for me, I got all these little movies. I could just put on Lord of the Rings and have a Lord of the Rings fest, you know. What do we used to call them? Like a marathon. And I have the extended version. So, you know, if anybody knows Lord of the Rings, it's already 3 hours. So mine is like 3 hours and 40 minutes times three. By the time I get done, that disappointment's going to be gone away out of the mind. And maybe you'll remember what happened You know, so you remember it, and the disappointment comes back, and you have to do something again, and you keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it. Eventually, something else gets our attention, and that disappointment, we stop thinking about that old thing that we wished we hadn't happened. It's all gone, right? Nope. That emotional energy of disappointment is roaming around in the body. But now, it doesn't have a phenomena, an experience it's connected to. It's just in the body, a dis-ease, an uncomfortness, just a there. And the mind, the symbiotic relationship, it starts coming up with a story about why you feel so diseased, so discomforted, so unpleasant. And that energy is no longer disappointment. It's just the gunk, the dread, the stuff. Oh yeah, that's that energy I always have. Because I'm just so about life. Nothing goes right. The stories start getting all filled up around that emotion. Then we start reacting to that. We're reacting to that waking up in the morning in a grumpy mood or feeling just like things aren't right, so we have to try to make our life right. We have to get a different job. We have to fix the house, change this, change that, fix everything, trying to get this cheeriness back. You know, this is the way Pema Chodron put it. She says, it's like a room of your own, a room with a view, with the temperature and the smells and the music you like. You want it your own way. So you just like to have a little peace. You'd like to have a little happiness. You know, just give me a break. But the more you think that way, the more you try to get your life to come out so that it will always suit you, the more your fear of other people and what's outside your room grows. So rather than becoming more relaxed, you start pulling down the shades and locking the door. And when you do go out, you find the experience more and more. It's this way in which we are now convinced that the get rid of that edginess in life just needs a little bit more pleasure. Fix things up a little bit more the way I want it to be, and that edginess is going to go away. And then somebody comes along and says, you should meditate. You should just get still and quiet, and that's going to take that edginess away. So you start getting still, you start getting quiet. That reactivity layer begins to settle a little bit, not quite so reactive. And then this moment comes when you start feeling this uneasiness, this subtler, deeper, been with me for a lifetime level of dis-ease, dissatisfaction, irritation, a rub, a deep annoyance, a dread. People explain it all different ways. And it feels like meditation has somehow disrupted our stillness, our good, our happy, our cheerfulness. But it's not. It's actually tapping back into that emotional disappointment that you never let yourself feel. You never let it just come and be and pass, like all emotions do. They don't stay. They just pass. But what stays is that energy when we don't let it ride away. Having disappointment about something, that's good. That's just normal. That's just, oh, I wish I had a disappointment. It's the not letting it go away. not letting it be real. Now, it's that story that we get. So in some respects, what practicing with aversion, and especially these uncomfortable emotions are talking about, is how do I practice with that ickiness, that unease, that whatever you want to call it. For me, it was like dread. It was anxiety, dread. And the more I got in the body and the more settled I got, the more dread and the more anxiety that came. And I thought, I'm going to be swallowed up by this stuff. I'm going to be swallowed up by all this anxiety. It's not going to ever go away. The dread is always going to be here. But it's not. And that energetic shift we're going to talk about in restlessness rather than talk about it with aversion. Right now I just want to talk about how can we be okay with practicing with this uneasiness that comes up when we get still. It's going to come. If it hasn't come, it will come. And for those of you that most of it has, you have already seen it. And you're still trying to get past it. We don't want to get past it. We want to stay right there with it and wait a little bit. And I'll see if I can help you understand a little bit more about it. So we always attach that ickiness to the emotion anger. Like aversion is always like anger. And we live in a world where anger is like a cursed word. We never want to admit we're angry. So we'll be anything almost, but we can't be angry. And if I am angry, because I don't get angry, you are making me angry. You or life or Trump, or you can put the little words in there. That's why I'm angry. I'm not angry normally. I'm angry because the world is so crazy, and that's why I'm angry. So I have learned that anger is not the same as aversion. And so I want to see if we can uncouple this relationship we have glued aversion to anger and rethink the way we think about anger. Maybe it's because I'm black and I come from a world full of social injustice that I have a completely different relationship with anger. And I know when I first came into this practice, everything I wanted to do was to smooth out that anger. Smooth out that discomfort, that kind of rage that I could just like lose it on someone. Somehow I gotta be nicer, smoother, calmer. Somebody could come up and smack me and I'd be like, that's okay, I'm good, no problem. That's this idea that Buddhism somehow or another is this smooth, easy way of going through life. And there is an easy way of going through life. That we're not trying to diminish. But if we could rethink the way we look at anger, we might could free ourselves from some of the muck and the mire that comes with aversion. Last time we talked about aversion being this word. What did I write that down? Nope. I can't remember the Pali word, so I just don't want to mess it up. But the meaning of that Pali word is striking against. So aversion is like a striking against. You could think of it as like a resistance, a hitting, a striking. And when you look at all the commentaries about ill will, it's like a hostility towards a person. So there's this striking, there's this hostility towards another. And when you look at anger, Gil Fronstal, he wrote this book called The Issue at Hand, and in it he said that anger, the word that's usually transcribed for anger is dosa, and dosa is hostility. So he said you could have anger without hostility. Just because you have anger doesn't mean you have hostility. So the aversion that we're looking at, you could think of it as, is like a hostile resistance to something, to someone. It's the hostility and the resistance to whatever is happening in this present moment. It is not anger, this universal understanding of anger. So think about it. If you haven't felt anger, you really need to feel it at some point, because it is like invigorating. It can bring up some energy that you didn't even know you had. Energy from all kinds of, I mean, it's just like almost like this massive charge of energy. So think to yourself about all the social injustice, about what we're doing to the earth, about what's happening in the world. How docile do we have to be in order to make that shift? In order to resist or push up against that. If we do it with hostility, this kind of, I hate you, that's why I'm fighting against you, then it's just going to burn us up. That hostility isn't going to hurt anybody that you're upset with. It's going to hurt you and burn you up. But if you took the energy that comes from anger and used it to move in the world in this non-harming, actually kind, restraintful way, oh, it's completely different world. You just have to think about the civil rights. You have to think about Gandhi. Think about these massive movements we've had in the world where massive changes have happened. And I'm sure there were a lot of people that were angry. So it's not anger. And I'm sure there were a lot of people that were hostile. So it's not, everybody's not going to be hostile. But most of these major shifts in the world came from non-violence. They came from non-hostile shifting of anger. It's like anger is used in a non-hostile way. We're not going to change hostility with hostility. We're going to change hostility with non-hostility. This is the way the Dhammapada says. He insulted me, he hit me, beat me, robbed me. For those who brood on this, hostility isn't stilled. He insulted me, hit me, beat me, robbed me. For those who don't brood on this, hostility is stilled. Hostilities aren't stilled through hostility, regardless. Hostilities are stilled through non-hostile. This is an unending truth. So I think what it means is that we are trying to somehow or another diminish our hostility without losing the gift that comes from anger, the gift that comes from the emotional charge that some of these really difficult emotions actually bring us. There is a sutra that I think is probably the best sutra on aversion, but we hardly ever talk about it. It's the Discourse on Effacement. I don't even know the word effacement. I don't use that word, so ever. So I look it up. This is the only time I ever even seen the word was in this sutra. It's like, it means eliminating something or a reduction of something to insignificance. So we're reducing down some energy so that it doesn't even have any significance anymore. So in this discourse, which is rather long, it's one of my favorite discourses, but it's rather long. But in it, the Buddha's talking about what What do you do for this, to create this effacement? The effacement that we're doing is eliminating this idea of self. So if you think about a self, the part of the problem with this idea of self and most of our aversion, these hindrances, all of them are about how we're moving through the world with self. And so this aversion is when we need to protect the self from something that we don't like, something we don't want. And we get very reactive in our protecting. So the point that I'm making around anger is that if there's hostility, then we're pushing up against or striking up against anything that we think is going to hurt us with this hostile way. Instead, we could begin to deface or make the selfing aspect of these unpleasant emotions, that selfing tendency to react against that, we could begin to make it insignificant. And if we began to make it insignificant, we won't lose the energy that comes with anger. We just won't have the hostility, the suffering that's unnecessary that we bring to ourselves because of that hostility. So the effacement that Buddha's talking about is, how does one get rid of this self, right? Diminish, eliminate this selfing aspect. So he starts out by listing 8 attainments that a monk could have. I'm going to show you some of them. I'm not going to read through all of them. I'm just going to tell you what these 8 are. These 8 are what we would think is total bliss. If we saw somebody who pretty much had reached all 8 of these, we would swear they are enlightened. So this is a person that they're completely detached from sense objects. They're not leaning into the pleasurable things and avoiding the unpleasurable. They don't have that level of, I gotta have that because it's gonna make me happy. They don't have that anymore. They've gotten rid of that. That's one attainment. So just imagine if you no longer were trying to always move towards the pleasurable and avoid the unpleasurable. They have identifiable levels of inner tranquility. So when they walk, their energies, they just look tranquil, peaceful. Almost like when you see somebody when they come from a retreat and they have that little glow and you're like, oh my God, I gotta go to a retreat. That's what's gonna give me that. So they have that tranquil, peaceful way about them. They live in equanimity. They're mindful and they're clear. They have clear comprehension, clear awareness. They can just cut through the muck, see right through to whatever's present in the moment. So they can see how things are, the way they are. They don't have any distinctions between pleasure and pain. They're good, whatever. Pleasure, pain, it's okay. They're good. And they've transcended the highest level of perception, consciousness, and infinite space. They're just like a walking, blissful, golden beam of light. And you would think that reaching those levels of meditative practice, what we think of as bliss, peaceful, calm beings, that would be the erasure, the effacement of the self. That would get rid of the self. And the Buddha was like, no. Nope. That's not going to do it. You got to take a moment. All this practicing we're doing to try to get to some blissful state and peacefulness, that's not going to do it. He says that he goes through a lot in the sutra about there's a lot of redundancy, But he kind of explains what effacement is and what you have to do to get to it. And it all centers around non-harm, kindness, and restraint. Basically, that in order for us to eliminate this need to protect the self, this hostile pushing against life to make life okay for us, we need to act intentionally in a way that's not going to be harmful, that's kind, that's based in kindness, and that is a restraint of our own getting our own way all the time. That's it. We are constantly practicing around those three things. You may have these attainments of great peace of mind, but that will not cut through that selfing aspect of hostility. It will still show up unless you're willing to hold your actions in this level of kindness, in this level of non-harm, and in this level of restraint from always having to get your way. So something that lost my page here. So I thought I would spend the next few minutes just talking a little bit about how it is that we could begin to hold practice in this container. This is really, those three things, the non-harm, the kindness, and the restraint, is right thought. That's pretty, it's right there in the Eightfold Path, right there in the Four Noble Truths. I think the more I practice, the more I am certain in my own practice that the Eightfold Path, the Four Noble Truths, all these lists, the three characteristics, the Brahmaviharas, all of this stuff is rubbing me up against all the stuff that I don't want to see. It's creating a disruption, And that creation is because fundamentally the first truth to all liberation starts with noticing that they're suffering. We have to see it. We have to feel it and get comfortable up close with it so that we're willing to hold that suffering long enough to see how it has come to be. We want to stay with it until the mind lets go, releases its grip. So I got three ways I want to help us begin to see how we could practice with this hostility or our emotions, these negative emotions, in a way that will help us reduce the hostility, help us live more intentionally out of a non-harming way, out of kindness, and out of this restraint that we are going to live. I'll just give you a couple of things the way he says it. So here is how he says you practice effacement. Others will be harmful. We shall not be harmful. Thus, effacement can be done. Others will kill living beings. We shall abstain from killing living beings. Thus, effacement can be done. Others will take what is not given. This is the precepts. Others will commit wrong actions. We shall not commit wrong actions. This is what he's saying. Others will be jealous. We shall not be jealous. Others will be envious. We shall not be envious. Others will be domineering. We shall not be domineering. Others will be faithless. We shall be faithful. Others will be negligent. We shall be heedful. And he goes through this long list of 44 things. He doesn't talk anything about sitting still. What he's talking about is paying attention to our actions and whether or not we're kind, whether or not we are non-harming, and whether or not we have some restraint. But in order to get to that, we need to learn how to be still. That's part of this whole practice. So first way that we could begin to see and be still with some of this difficulty is that when you notice some discomfort, some unpleasantness, some I don't like it, you feel that, and everything in you wants to shift towards something you like. Instead, just for a second, try shifting to metta instead. Metta is supposed to be the antidote to aversion. And we may not be able to stay with the metta. It takes a long time to unhook ourselves from habits. But try and see. What if I just shift to metta? Not, okay, I'm going to do metta so I won't be mad. It's not that. It's you're mad. So can you take your wholehearted energy and try doing some metta? You could try doing metta by just saying the phrases. But sometimes I can get a little, you know, kind of mechanical. We're not really doing metta. So instead, you could actually think of some thing, some person, some being that brings you joy just by looking at it. My granddaughter, all I have to do is think of her. See, I just think of her and I'm like, she's so cute. Doesn't matter. You just see if you can literally shift your attention to metta. The difference between shifting your attention from this discursive kind of difficult energy to metta versus shifting your attention from the difficult energy to watching TV is that metta is still in the present moment. You're not leaving the present moment. When you shift your attention into metta, you're still right here. You're still embodied. But instead of embodying the difficulty, you can embody this metta. And when you embody that metta, you can bring that difficulty right back. And now you can hold it with a very different energy. But if you turn your attention away from this difficulty towards eating or TV or drinking or whatever we turn our attention to, we're leaving this energy behind, trying to go to something else, something that we think will make us happy and get rid of that unpleasantness. Metta, you're trying to develop the capacity to hold that energy. And you may not have that capacity right then, so you shift your attention to metta, generate some inner strength, and then you can hold it. I have a little sheet that I gave you guys that you can get at the end. I used to use this because I had so much unpleasantness, but this is a little sheet. And I put it on cardstock so you can cut them out. They're kids with unpleasant emotions. In some respects, we got to think that some of these unpleasant emotions are really our old kids that are still there. And we got to see it in a childlike way so that we don't get too caught in hating ourselves because there's some, you know, disappointment or discouragement that's there. So you want to see that emotion as it's a little kid so you can hold it in a way that's kinder and gentler. Take a look at it. Another way that you can begin to work with the hostility and kind of get the hostility away is to separate the object of your aversion from the aversion itself. This is more like picking something easy and practicing with it so you can get up close with it. I'll give you a couple of mine. One, I put those bulletin boards up and I put those little pictures on there, and I notice now that on the left side, it feels a little cocky. I need to straighten it. And so every time I go over and look at those pictures, I always feel this, I need to straighten that. I should just take the staples out and straighten it, and then it'll be right. There's an annoyance, an irritation with that. And I will stand there and look at it, feel it, get to know irritation in a situation that's not threatening. It's not the end of the world. Nobody cares. Many of you may not have even looked at that board or even noticed it. It's just a moment between me and getting to know irritation. I have to get to know irritation in times that are not so dramatic. So when I feel irritation, I know it. I am used to it, and I can hold it a little easier. So practice with it. Look for things that irritate you. Put a ticking clock by your meditation bench, and you know that's going to drive you crazy. But just be right there with it so you can get to know it and feel it and not get so afraid of it when it shows up. It doesn't have to turn from irritation to rage if you get to know irritation as just irritation. Another one is, I always volunteer to clean the toilets at retreats, and I hate cleaning the toilets. And I get so mad at the way people treat bathrooms. But every time that anger, every time that anger comes up, I can always remind myself, aha, you volunteered for this. So what else is going on besides your anger? We know that anger is always going to be there. What else is there? Seeing, hearing, feeling, touching. You can actually begin to open up the other sense doors so you can diminish the thought-driven anger that's there. That hostility gets driven down. It gets subsided, and you can work with all the other sense doors that happen to be going on. But you'll have to do it with something that irritates you or drives you or angers you, but it's safe enough that you can spread it out a little bit and get to know it. We want to let anger come up enough that we know it, like an old friend, and we're not afraid of it and we're not upset about it anymore. So some other way you can do it is you can, when you're sitting, recall a moment when you were angry or some emotional reactivity happened. You lost it. You never want anyone to know that you did that or you even thought that. Call it up in the mind when you're sitting there quietly. But instead of analyzing what did you do, who did what, just watch what happened. Just replay it, like replaying a movie with the sound down and just looking at it, looking at it, looking at it. Notice, you know, like keep coming back to the body and noticing what the body's going through as you as you see and watch this experience go by, and just noticing how the body's feeling, noticing who's doing what, what's happening, who said what, this is that, then, and just watch. You can begin to see conditioning and patterns that you don't necessarily see, which is the next and the last one, which has to do with some of these reoccurring emotions. Some of these emotions we have, they are more of a habit than they are anything else. For me it was anger. I didn't know it was irritation. I had to learn that the hard way. But it really was irritation. I was irritated and annoyed with everything. So this irritation, annoyance is such a habit. I don't even see it anymore. But you can see that there are certain emotions that show up in your life. Almost every day you feel that emotion. Almost all the time it's always there, lingering about. It's more of a habit than it is anything else. And in order for us to deal with those kind of emotions, it's a little bit of a different thing. I don't think there's anything better than NVC. Nonviolent communication is the best way for dealing with habitual emotions. I'm not even talking about the talking to people, the communication aspect of that. I never really could get into that. I never really could get into the way the structure of the language was so I could talk in that language. But the one thing that NVC did for me that I swear is the best thing that ever happened was it helped me begin to understand when I am feeling this general localized discomfort and not knowing what's going on. And instead of just looking for some way to cheer me up, to be able to be with it and stay there. And so I made some little cards with the NVC needs on them and some cards with the NVC feelings. And I would just sit there and play this little game. I just asked myself what I felt. And when I came to a feeling that seemed to resonate, then I would ask myself, what needs was I missing? What did I need? And so rather than explain a lot of the needs and feeling part, I have a handout for you guys that's also around the NVC thing that has lots of feelings, lots of needs, so you could begin to see what's actually going on. Learning to practice with whatever that discomfort is first. Treating yourself in this way that says, okay, I just don't like the way I feel. I need to cheer up. I want to do something to make things happier, better, whatever. You know, you just feel it and you know you want to do something to change that. Before you do something, and I'm not saying don't do something different, before you do, see if you can spend some time with it and get to know that discomfort, dis-ease a little bit. We probably should stop here. I could go on forever. You already know that. But you're getting a little glazed eyes, and so I'm like, okay. Let's just sit for a minute. We'll leave it right there. Sit quietly here. I want to read a poem from Kazuki Tanahashi, called Pine Needle. A pine needle in an ocean of trees. Timeless serenity in this very moment. A pine needle lying in the stone garden. Timeless serenity in this very moment. A pine needle flying in a stormy wind, timeless serenity in this very moment. So I'll see if there's any questions. just probably have time for a couple or a comment or two. So the question is, how do you judge the causes that we should reserve this anger I'm talking about, or what causes? It's almost like any cause, and you're right, any cause, whatever. I mean, the anger is going to be associated with some value you have that's going to push that anger up, right? What we're trying to work on is the hostility, this striking against or the hatred of the cause. Or a way to think about it is, if you are connected to this doing something about climate change, and every time you hear about climate change, you get this furnace burning inside you, right? You need the energy to be able to actually go out and work in the world to affect awareness, education, change, support, or whatever you want to call it when it comes to climate change and what it's going to take to move the world or move our energies in a different way. But if you go out in the hostility of that energy also, so it's not just the anger that we need to do something about this, or I need to do something about this. It's hostility towards people who don't believe that way, or the fact that we're living this way in the first place, and all of that hostility and all the stuff we've done to the earth, and oh my God, my kids are going to be suffering forever. All of that hostility towards it will burn you up. You will spin in that anger and that rage for a long, long time. So you're not trying to get rid of the anger, the energy that it takes to actually make a change in the world on whatever cause is important to you. You want to diminish the hostility so you have the energy that can help us move the world in a, you know, in a better way, however, whatever way that you think that is, and not burn yourself out with all the hostility. You see what it is? So the cause itself doesn't matter. That can be any cause that's important to you. You know it's important to you because it generated all this heat. So you just want to diminish that hostility, but keep your anger high enough so you can keep moving and you can go out there and do what needs to be done. See? Right.
So when am I turning towards something positive like that to avoid experiencing my emotions and strong emotions?
So the question is, I guess I'm just going to say that sometimes there's this fear that when we shift towards metta or something like that, we are avoiding the negative emotion, this unpleasantness. And there's a way in which you could begin, in the beginning that might be what you're doing, right? But what you're really trying to shift from is the hostility. Because these unpleasant emotions, they're strong and they bring a lot of hostility with them. But when you start getting up close and comfortable with them, the hostility's gone. You won't need to shift from that powerful energy. You will have the capacity to wield it. The problem we have with some of these really intense emotions is we can't wield the level of energy that comes with them. It's almost like if you see, you know, you can hear people talking about the strength that people get. I think it was, I can't remember. It was Narayan was talking about a little small woman that was able to go in and carry people out of some catastrophe, but I can't remember now what it was. Some catastrophe happened, and when Narayan was here this past weekend, she talked about this little small woman that went in and was carrying people, you know, 2-3 times her strength. That is emotional energy. That is in it right there. We don't want to get rid of that kind of energy. We need it to survive and take on some of the difficulties that come in life. But the hostility is going to kill us. It's going to eat us alive. Instead of worrying so much about whether it should be this way or it shouldn't be this way or how can this be or whatever, it's more about being with whatever is and doing what needs to be done. So the metta is designed to help you stay embodied, stay in the present moment, but to begin to work on that hostility. When you work on the hostility, and that's what metta is working on, is the hostility, you can still have extremely powerful energy and not have the hostility. That's what you're working on. Yeah. Just think about it like this. When you're mad like that or resentful or whatever that, you know, jealous, whatever that energy is that we hate to admit that we have, kindness is not the word you'll be thinking about. Maybe keeping yourself out of jail might be something you're thinking about, but it's not kindness. It's not non-harm. It's not restraint. So when you shift the mind to this metta, you are bringing in kindness, and it throws the mind off. Like, how do I bring it in? That's why you have to stay in the moment and bring, not this kind of, oh, I wish you goodness, not that, what Narayan called defensive metta, not that. You want to bring in a level of kindness. Where is kindness? Where is non-harm in this moment? Here, right now. And that's why I can think about my granddaughter. I can think about something that's going to bring me some joy right here so I can feel it. And then I can look at the situation in a different energy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One more. Was that you? Did you have your hand up? Great. You it is. So I think the question is around, what do you do when there's someone that you're like pushes your buttons, for lack of a better word, and then when you get caught in it, then your whole day gets disruptive. And how do you deal with that? Two things. One, we got to talk about most of this next month, because a lot of this is restlessness. It's the nature of restlessness. It's that energy that's in the body, and what do I do with it? But a harder, more difficult thing to face is that the person isn't actually doing this to you. This is the harder part that we have the difficulty with. Because when something happens, it's our own judgment that it shouldn't happen that makes this hostility rise, right? Somebody does something, they did it. Like it or not, it's a done thing. But our minds say they shouldn't do that. They shouldn't have done that. That is not right. You can't be that way. They are that way. But we are locked in this, that is not the right way to be. And that idea that they should not be this way, we get stuck in that energy. And you can see now we have moved from reality, because reality is they are that way. They just did that. Yes, I did. And we are stuck in this battle in the mind trying to not make that so, because we don't like that. All of that energy, all that hostility, anxiety, all that stuff is all our own creation. And we are going to have to learn how to work with that. So what you're trying to do is, if that person that does things irritates you, annoys you, right? That's what I'm saying. You got to practice with the nature of annoyance when you're not around them. You practice. When you're around them, you get annoyed. Things happen. It gets ugly. Don't judge yourself. Be with it the best you can. See if you can hold it in kindness, non-harm, and restraint. And then maybe when you're sitting, relive it. Just bring it in the mind and just watch it. Turn the sound down so you're not talking to yourself about it. You're just watching what happened, the movement of people. And you can begin to get to this subtle level where you can see it. But by and large, what we want to do is just learn to see that we're making our own hostility unnecessarily. And that you can begin to let go of. But that you have to get up close with. You have to see that the person's not doing it. And then next month, we're going to talk about what do we do with all that energy that's in there that actually disrupts our whole day because we're so caught in the energy of it. But that's more of the restlessness side of the hindrance. The aversion side is just the hostility itself. And that is not coming from the person. It's coming from our own thinking that it shouldn't be that way. Does that make sense? And that's why the practice is so good. Because when you can get to a place where someone can do something, you don't like what they're doing, but you don't have no hostility, you're not going to have all that excess energy either. Do you see the difference? Yeah, that's what we're gonna practice with. We just do it in little bitty baby steps. Inch up on it. Yeah, Sue.
Something that Narayan said this weekend that I found so helpful, to remember that each of us is somebody else's difficult person.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
Yesterday.
That's right.
Whatever. I mean, that's on some of the smaller things, but it was really helpful.
Yeah, that's right. She just said that Narayan reminded us that we are all somebody else's difficult person.
And maybe many other
people's difficult people. Yeah. So it's putting it in context so that you can see, because you can't change, we can't change other people. We can't get them to get right. I have tried, I'm certain that we cannot do it. The only thing that we can do is affect our own thinking around something. And hostility is not about the thing outside. It's our own thinking. And if you begin to see that hostility, that anger, that aversion, all that that striking energy that comes with these negative emotions is not coming from the thing, it's coming from you, you could begin to actually liberate yourself, because you have absolute capacity to liberate yourself from your own hostility. You can't liberate other people as much as we wish to, but we can liberate ourselves. All right. Thank you very much.